Today we want to start a new series. We're going to spend some time in the book of Hebrews. I'm not going to attempt to do a real systematic study of it, teaching of it. I would like our time there to be more of a time of exploration. Just explore it. If you're able, I would encourage you, while we're in it, to explore it on your own. It's one of my favorite books. I'm a John guy, but John probably didn't write this, but Hebrews is pretty good. And as some of you perhaps know, a question that I have for many, many years kept in the back of my mind, and it's still there, as I seek to understand the Christian life and what it is the Lord has for us and how it is that we're supposed to be individually, how we're supposed to be together. A question that I always keep in the back of my mind is, what issues cause us to need the book of Hebrews? The main point of Hebrews is pretty straightforward. The book itself clues us in about what its main point by saying the main point is. Chapter 8, the main point. That's helpful, isn't it? If you're ever asked what's the main point, here it is, the main point. And what has been said is this: we have such a high priest who has taken his seat at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, a minister in the sanctuary and in the true tabernacle, which the Lord pitched, not man. So the main point is we have a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle. That's the main point of the book. So what issues cause us to need a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle? If I shared with you, or if you shared with me, when would I bring up an issue, or when would you bring up an issue to which the answer would be, you know what, you need a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle? If I told you I wasn't coping well with the stresses at work, could you say that then? You need a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle. You know, if I told you, I feel like I failed a little bit as a parent recently, I'd like to improve my skills as a parent. You know, this thing was Kimberly, we were slow on the trigger. Should have been there a long time ago. How can I improve my skills as a parent? Might you say to me, well, what you really need, Roger, is a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle to help you with that. If I want to learn how to resolve conflicts better, conflict resolution, is that when I need the book of Hebrews? You know, what about manage my anger? You know, what if I'm just feeling depressed and sad? Is that a good time to read the book of Hebrews? Is that when I need it? You know, what if I just want God's help and what direction I should go or what decisions I should make about job or career or some relationship when I'm looking for direction in life and know what God's will is? Is that the time to read the book of Hebrews? So a question that I've kept in the back of my mind for years is, what issues cause us to need a high priest at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in the heavens, in that tabernacle that the Lord pitched, not man? That's the main point. When do we need it? Of course, it could be that the high priest in the heavenly tabernacle is helpful in ways that we don't know, dealing with issues that we do know about. Maybe the high priest in the heavenly tabernacle is more helpful than we know in issues that we're concerned about. Maybe if you're depressed and sad, a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle can help you more than you know. So that's possible. Maybe there's a bunch of issues like that. Maybe if I'm just struggling with loneliness, or you know, my heart is broken over something, or I'm dealing with disappointment, or I want to resolve conflicts better, maybe a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle can help with that more than I think. But of course, it also could be that a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle is helpful for issues that we're not much interested in. That the high priest promises help for issues that don't much occupy us. You know, it's like if I said snow removal equipment is on sale at Home Depot. You say, Roger,
I live in Southern California. I'm not much interested in the issue of snow removal equipment. I don't care if it's on sale or not. This is perhaps the high priest in the heavenly tabernacle is good for issues that are more like snow removal equipment in Southern California. That's not our issue. We don't care about that. A large part of our exploration of the book will be trying to answer the question, why is a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle a good thing, a needed thing, you know, a thing worth writing a book about and saying this is the main point? You know, I suspect that if all of us were honest, what issues did you face this week about which you said, need that high priest in the heavenly tabernacle? Probably none of us thought that. So we want part of our exploration to be, why is the high priest up there in that tabernacle, can't even see a good thing? One characteristic of Hebrews that's a little different than the majority of New Testament books, the typical pattern in New Testament letters especially, is that they tend to first have teaching, doctrine. So you get presentation of the gospel, or the content of the gospel, teaching about the gospel. And then after you've got all that teaching content, that doctrine, then you get the exhortations at the end, the applications that are made. So, okay, here's all the stuff, therefore walk worthy of the call. And you get all the practical exhortations that come at the end. In Hebrews, we find exhortations sprinkled throughout the teaching. They're kind of scattered throughout the whole book. They infiltrate and permeate the unfolding revelation of Jesus Christ as a high priest. So that's a little bit different, just that you get these exhortations scattered throughout the epistle. All the exhortations in Hebrew are in the plural. In the New American Standard, there's 12 different times where we get an exhortation, and they all start with "let us." It's the vegetable exhortations, lettuce things. But they're all plural. So the exhortations in the book of Hebrews are not exhortations, first of all, about what any of us should do individually. They are all exhortations about what we should do. So they're not just an exhortation about what Steve should do or what Tracy should do or what Patty should do. They're exhortations about what we, the Church of Jesus Christ, should do. Hebrews has very good input for answering questions like, what directions should Life Christian Fellowship go? What kinds of things should we, the body of Christ, get involved in? What's the Lord's will for Life Christian Fellowship? Hebrews is a good book to read for that, because every exhortation is an exhortation about what we should do. You know, let us do these things. Of course, exhortations that are given to a community always have an individual component. So there will be stuff for each one of us individually to do if we're going to heed the exhortations. You know, each of us is just is one unique person. You live your whole life just as the single person that you are. It's kind of a bummer, actually. Don't you wish you could be somebody else for a day or so, something? But you have to live your whole life stuck just with you, just as you. You can't be somebody else. You can't be two people. You can't be a group. You can just be you. But none of us is meant to live isolated. None of us is meant by the Lord Himself to be alone. We're meant to be part of a community. We're meant to have relationships. We're meant to belong. We're meant to belong to a people, the people of God. Meant to belong to the body of Christ, to be individually members of one another. So all these exhortations, they have an individual component, but they're meant to be given to us as a community. It's about what we as a community of the Lord's people should be about. I'm going to show us in just a moment the first of one of those 12 passages that has "let us" in it, the first one that occurs in the letter. But before that, I want to just call attention to one of the major perceptions, one of the major preoccupations that's found in the book of Hebrews. Hebrews has the perspective that what it is that it's talking about, and again, the main point is something about we having a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle, but Hebrews has a perspective that what it talks about is greater and better. All through the book, there is talk about what is greater, about what is superior, about what is better. That the Son is superior to the angels. That Jesus is greater than Moses. That Melchizedek is greater than Levi. That the new commandment, the new covenant, is better than the old covenant. It has better promises in the new covenant than the old covenant. It has better sacrifices. The heavenly tabernacle is greater than the earthly tabernacle. So part of the point of this kind of verse is that not only do you have a high priest, but he's in a greater tabernacle, greater than the one that was built by Moses, staffed by the Levites. So lots of claims all throughout the letter to things that are superior, to things that are better, to things that are greater. So an obvious and a critical issue is, what's all this better stuff? What happens when you have the better stuff that couldn't happen when you had the inferior stuff? Anything? What difference does it make to have something better? And of course, it immediately raises the issue of what's the relationship between the two sets of things? How do the better things, the greater things, the superior things relate to the things that aren't so great, aren't as good? If I say to you, it brings up again the issue of, do you think you're interested in whatever the better is good for? Because it could be, well, I'm not really interested in that stuff that the better thing is good for. If I say to you, eat this, it's better food. You ask me, of course, how is it better? And I say, well, if you eat this, you won't live any longer, but you'll be able to snow ski into your 70s if you eat this food. It's better food, you'll be able to snow ski into your 70s. Maybe you say to that, cool, bring it on. I'd love to snow ski into my 70s. But of course, you might also say, I don't care about snow skiing. So I don't need the better food because I don't care about the issue that the thing is better for. So we have to ask ourselves, as we read about all this stuff that's better and superior, greater, well, better for what? Greater for what? And do I care about what it's better for? What if Hebrews offers a bunch of greater and better stuff, but it's basically about snow skiing into your 70s? You can say, great, I'm glad there's stuff that's that good, but it's not of concern to me. So we're going to keep asking, what's all this better stuff? Why was the better stuff needed? What's the better stuff good for? I think help with answering especially that second question of what is the better stuff good for, the exhortations can help us. Because I think the exhortations, we're exhorted to do things that the better will be useful in doing. And like, I know you couldn't do this before, but here's some better stuff. Now you can heed these exhortations. Now you as a group can do these kinds of things. So we can find some clues about why we need the better by what the exhortations are. So I want to call attention just to one other thing and then show you the first exhortation. The concern in the book of Hebrews is not the concerns of that we have at times of somebody hearing the gospel for the first time. Well, somebody that hasn't heard the gospel, that's the right first concern. They need to hear the gospel for the first time. That's not the concern of the book of Hebrews. Rather, the book of Hebrews is concerned about how, having heard the gospel, it plays out in people's lives and in the community of the people that have heard the gospel. So Hebrews is not so much about getting the toy as it is as how you play with it afterwards. What do you do with the toy after you did it? Well, you know, your favorite toy that you got for Christmas or that you gave for Christmas. You check in now. So since you've received it, what have you done with it? Is it from ignoring it and neglected it in the closet to played with it every day to accessorized it already or something like that? Hebrews is about not hearing the gospel for the first time, but having heard it, how does it play out? You know, now that you have it in your possessions. Out of chapter 2, we must pay much closer attention to what we have heard. So the issue is not, have you ever heard this? I know you've heard it, but it's necessary to pay closer attention to it so that we do not drift away from it. And how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? So the concern in the book is, I know that you've heard it. How much attention are you paying? And it's necessary perhaps to pay closer attention and not to neglect that those things are possible. And just, you know, think about some times where you weren't paying close enough attention. Perhaps because you weren't paying close enough attention, you messed up. They told you that you should do this and this and this and this with your car in that order. You go, oh yeah, right, got it. And then later, of course, you didn't have you got the that before the this and the those before the that, and you goofed up your car. I should have been paying better attention. Before I left Michigan, when I was home helping my mom move, she's computer challenged. When her new internet kept crashing her computer, so I gave her this whole sequence of things to do with your computer when it crashes. And my mom wasn't paying close enough attention. So now I sit on the phone. So what's it showing on the screen right now? Do this. So, I mean, we've all done that. I should have been paying better attention. Something like that. We can do that with this great salvation. Yes, I know that you've heard it. But how much attention are you paying to it? Or times when you neglected something and then paid the consequences for the neglect. You were supposed to wax the floor. Didn't we tell you that when we put it in? Yeah, I know, but I neglected to wax it. You were supposed to clean the coffee maker every 3 months. And you said, how long have you owned it now? Well, 2.5 years. Have you ever cleaned it? No. That's why it's not working. You neglected something that you should have been doing. So here the writer of Hebrews is concerned that we don't do that with salvation. Yes, I know you were saved 5 years ago. That's excellent. But have you neglected that great salvation for 5 years? Now it's bringing some consequences. So the book of Hebrews is concerned, you know, what you're doing with it after you've heard it. As you move down the road, as salvation plays out in our lives and in our relationships and our walk. Here's the first let us passage. It occurs at the beginning of chapter 4. This actually starts on a pretty serious and somber note. And I know we sang a song that says, I will not fear. This one's a little tension in that for a second. Let us fear. It's the first exhortation in the book. Let us fear. Not evil, though. We don't have to fear any evil. But here, let us fear if, while a promise remains of entering his rest, capital H, that's God's rest, any one of you may seem to have come short of it. So the serious kind of sound to it, kind of somber. The first exhortation is that we should be afraid. A lot of older translations have, let us fear lest. Lest is a really cool English word. You look it up in your dictionary, you find there's only one way that it's ever translated or interpreted or what it means as far as a definition. Lest means for fear that. So literally what's being said here is let us fear for fear that. There's a promise been made but that we should come short of it. So let us fear, for fear that having been given the promise, we don't attain the promise. So that's the thing that we should fear. Promise has been made. The promise, of course, reveals something of the Lord's purpose, of the Lord's plans, of the Lord's intentions. But though promised, perhaps what was promised is never taken hold of. The writer says we should fear that. We're going to come back to the specific issue that's talked about here as far as what's his rest. It's a big theme in the letter, so we're going to come back to that. But set aside this specific thing for a second and focus on just the general issue brought up here, because I think it's important. That's something that we should be afraid of is that what God himself intends for us to know, to walk in, to experience, he's promised it. And he's given provision for it. God has worked and to make the provision for the promise to be fulfilled. That what God himself has promised and given provision for, that we would end up not walking in those things. That we would not know those things. That we would come up short. That we should fear that fearful possibility of you get to the end of the road and you realize, you know what? Things could have been different than they were. It's almost like that poem of what might have been. God had promised that. He had made provision for that. And we never walked in it. He made promises for us to be a people of peace. I think I lived my whole life anxious. I'm thankful that he promised it, but I always came up short. We always came up short. We were never a people marked by either the peace or the graciousness or the love of God. Yeah, we kept talking about loving one another, but I don't think we ever quite did that. So the first issue that the writer brings up is kind of, I want you to be afraid that things that God has promised, things that God has made provision for, things that God intends and purposes for his people, kind of that it happens that his people don't enter into those things, don't know those things, don't walk in those things. And again, I want to remind you that the exhortations aren't just, they're not about individuals. They're not just about, did Roger take hold of the things that the Lord has for Roger? That's important. But it's about, did we, as the Lord's people, the things that the Lord intends for us to know as his people, as a community, that he promised us, is that what the community was for us? And a part of the reason this exhortation is given is because there's been a whole lot of folks who had the promise who didn't attain to the promise, who came up short. And he says, so there's lots of precedent for that happen. I don't want it to happen to you. So be afraid. Some of why you need something better is so it doesn't happen to you. So there's some solution there for how can it not happen. But just that issue, it's like not actually taking hold of what it is that God intends. So I don't want to just linger on this because I'd like you to run with it in your own mind and your own heart. But if I asked you in general, the Church of Jesus Christ, and what the Church of Jesus Christ experiences and knows and walks in, does it regularly find the fulfillment of all that God has promised? Or does it regularly come up short to what God has promised? So that you just experience the church and what people are supposed to know by being part of the church. You go read Ephesians and have all this stuff about every member supplying and the church being built up in love until it attains to the full measure of the stature of Christ. So that sounds like us. Or you say, that sounds really good. Sounds really wonderful. I don't know if I've ever seen that, either with the people I fellowship with or anybody. So just that issue of what God has promised of entering in and actually walking in that, knowing it, attaining to it. So just a final, I'd just like you to think about that. That's how the book opens. It starts with, be afraid. It's not meant, I don't think, to torture us. It's meant to cause us to pay attention. Don't neglect. Because the provision, you know, the way is there for you actually to find the fulfillment of the promise. And we'll talk more about the specific thing here. What is the promise of his rest? If I had stopped you at the door on the way in, it says, have you been yearning to enter his rest? What are you talking about? I don't know. What is that? And are you afraid of coming up short of it? I don't even know what it is. So we're going to talk about what's entering his rest all about. But just that general issue of the Lord makes a provision, but we don't reach it. We don't walk in it. We don't know it. Hebrews is all about God has now made provision by greater, superior, better things so that it actually can be true. People can actually walk that way, live that way, know those things in their relationship. It should also tell us the Christian life is not just about getting things from God that we know that we need. I know I'm lonely. I hope to get from God some help with my loneliness. I know I'm sad. I hope he cheers me up. I know I let my anger get out of control at times. I hope he helps me be patient. So issues that I know I have, issues that I see, you know, are destructive in my own life or in my own relationships, I would like God to help me with those things. You know, I'd like to help me so my wife isn't hurt or my kids beat up. So I'm hoping to find from God help with all these things. And of course, I'd like to go to heaven when I die. Christian life is not just about getting good things from God that we know we like or need or are issues for us. Christian life is also about getting what God has promised for you, for us, about what he wants from his people and for his people, about what he wills and intends. So even if none of us said, you know, the things we don't care about his rest, we care about other things. For us to be able to hear, he cares about for us. God cares about us entering into his rest. Whatever that is for a second, that's his intention. He's promising, guys, I'm going to let you into my rest. I want you to enter it and to be there together. So the Christian life is about, you know, not just getting what I want or what you want or what you feel you need or what I feel I need, but actually taking hold of this is what God intended for us to know as his people. And we don't want to get to the end and say, you know what, God wanted that for us, but we never lived like that. You know, we didn't know those kinds of things. We didn't walk that way. Those things were not true of us. So I hope that stirs your interest about the book and, again, gets you exploring it a little bit. And we'll just kind of wander around in it, go forward and backward sometime to get a hold of what all this better, greater stuff is, what this main point is about the high priest in the heavenly tabernacle. What's that good for? What issues do we have that we need that for? And maybe it's more helpful in conflict resolution than we know. So maybe we'll learn that. But it could be, you know, I figured out how to resolve conflicts with a couple counseling sessions. But I learned how to enter into God's rest because I have a high priest in the heavenly tabernacle, and God promised that I would enter his rest. And I needed that high priest, you know, in that greater tabernacle to take hold of that. And not me, but us. We needed that for us together to know what God intended for us as his people. So I hope that stirs your thought and gets you launched on your own exploration of it.